Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Safety. My name is Steven. You guys may remember me from the last few episodes. I want to welcome my co-host again, Sam.
Hey, everyone. I'm glad to be back.
So today we're going to dive into a pretty touchy subject, but I think it'll be interesting.
Ooh, touchy. Like what?
So the battle of marijuana versus alcohol. Dun-dun! The question always comes up during our program Rachel's first week live. Constantly we're asked, which is better for you, or which is worse for you, alcohol or marijuana? But before we find ourselves deep in the weeds on this topic...
Man, see, I'm always one for the dad jokes, but that one was just bad.
Sorry. All right, it is a Freudian slip. But first, any discussion about this topic must first be viewed under the lens of the law. So in Indiana, the legal age for consuming alcohol is 21. Also in Indiana, cannabis is not legal to be sold or possessed for individual consumption.
So I guess it's pretty straightforward. We're done, right?
Not exactly. That would make this a pretty short podcast. While most high school and college students understand some of the health and legal implications of underage drinking and recreational marijuana use, they're also savvy enough to want more honest information.
Like a head-to-head comparison of alcohol versus cannabis?
Yeah, something like that.
And what about CBD? How does that fit into this equation?
So that's exactly my point. It's all so confusing, and it gets pretty tricky. First of all, the amount of quality evidence-based research on alcohol use far surpasses that of cannabis, particularly studies evaluating long-term use. Secondly, methods for consuming cannabis vary, and each method has a differing effect. All these factors and many more make a comparison of alcohol versus cannabis versus CBD daunting.
It seems like adding to the mix the underlying public perceptions about alcohol and marijuana, seems like it's way more socially acceptable to drink alcohol. And like on college campuses, even drinking to excess does not have the same stigma associated with it like marijuana use.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
Seems like many people have very strong opinions about both alcohol and marijuana use. And it seems like that can cloud people's abilities to look at the facts objectively.
Exactly. There's a lot of kind of social and political and legal ramifications going back hundreds of years about both of these substances. So let's take a look about what we know to be true about MJ. So cannabis is the generic term for the psychoactive component of the plant Cannabis sativa, also known as marijuana. Extracts from this plant contain more than 500 compounds, including delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinoid, more commonly known as THC. Say that 5 times fast. When consuming a product containing THC, like a joint or an edible, the THC attaches to the receptor in the nervous system. Then, through a series of pharmacologic events, a psychoactive response is elicited. In other words, you smoke some, you get high.
So how is that any different from CBD?
So CBD is also one of the cannabinoids or chemicals from that plant. CBD has about 10% of the psychoactive activity of THC.
So you can get high on CBD? Gosh, this is also confusing.
So, agreed. And what we need to help us figure out some of this are some experts to help bust a few myths and answer a few questions. We have with us today Dr. Mary Wormuth, Associate Professor of Clinical Emergency Medicine, Director of Medical Toxicology, and Assistant Medical Director of the Indiana Poison Center, associated with IU Health. Welcome, Mary.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We also have a returning guest, Hannah Skiba, who is the Public Information Officer from the IU Police Department. Hannah was on our last podcast on active shooters. Thank you for coming back, Hannah.
Of course, thanks for the invite.
And finally, we have Christy Fogg, who is a licensed therapist with a background in addictions counseling, who is also a regular on Safety. Great to have you back. This is the 6th podcast for you?
It is. Thank you guys for having me back again.
Thanks for joining us, guys. So let's get into it. One thing that may help us to start is a few definitions. Exactly what makes cannabis, cannabis? In other words, how does it affect you? And how does that differ from CBD, for instance?
So cannabis is the common term for the cannabis sativa plant. And there's actually 2 plants. First off is the hemp plant, which is grown for its industrial fibers. And then there's the marijuana plant, which is, of course, grown for its psychoactive product. The 2 main plant cannabinoids are delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, or delta-9 THC, and then cannabidiol or CBD. So hemp makes CBD and marijuana makes delta-9 THC. Delta-9 THC is a psychoactive substance. While CBD in its pure form actually does not have psychoactive effects. In order for a plant, a cannabis plant, to be classified as hemp, it has to contain less than 0.3% of the delta-9 THC. And anything over that is then called a marijuana plant. CBD, again, is derived from hemp, while delta-9 THC is derived from the marijuana plant. And of note, this is the most used drug in the world globally. So now that we have those definitions out of the way, let's look at how THC works. The primary cannabinoid receptor in our brain is originally named the CB1 receptor. So in essence, THC will bind to these CB1 receptors in the brain and you get your high. Although CBD binds to these receptors, it doesn't activate them, so you don't get the high. If you do feel a high from CBD, it's due to contamination with actual delta-9 THC. And it's reported that probably 30% of CBD samples are actually contaminated with delta-9 THC.
So does that mean that there are different concentrations of THC in different types of marijuana? Because I've heard today's weed is not my parents' weed from back in the day.
Yeah, actually that would be weed from my day. And yes, this is very true. Products are much more concentrated because plants are now specifically cultivated and bred. I mean, it's a business, right? You want your product to be good so that you get return customers. And the average amount of THC in confiscated plants in the 1990s was about 4%, and it's actually up to about 15% in 2018. In addition, there are something called THC concentrates, otherwise known as hash oil, that's used for something called dabbing, and that can have up to 70% THC. As for regulation, this is really complex. So there's federal laws, and then each state has its different law. So federal law classifies THC as a Schedule 1 agent, meaning it has no real medicinal use and it has a high potential for abuse and misuse. And each state is actually different. So it can be legal, it can be medicinal, it can be decriminalized, it can be fully illegal, and it can be CBD only. Regulation is also very complex and also very state-based. For instance, in California, products cannot have more than 10 milligrams of THC per serving. But what you need to keep in mind is that the amount of THC actually going into these products is not under FDA regulation. So there's actually no standard for content, purity, or potency. So there's oftentimes adulterants. So in general, you're actually never going to know exactly what you're getting or how much you're getting.
We've got a lot of different percentages of THC and different molecules in lots of different substances that you might be imbibing. Are there different effects based on the various ways that you can consume it, for edibles or smoking or dabbing? And is any one way more harmful than another?
Yeah, that's also another really good question. So it used to be that pretty much the only route was to roll your joint or your spliff and smoke it or occasionally bake it into brownies. But now it can be vaped, it can be dabbed, which is smoking that really concentrated hash oil, and then it can be eaten. I mean, edibles are everywhere. They're in candies, gummies, baked good, chips, and even beverages. Obviously, when THC is smoked, it quickly goes into the bloodstream and you have rapid, almost immediate effects. Edibles need to be absorbed and then put in the bloodstream, so symptoms start after 30 minutes to an hour. Of course, everyone's different depending on how you react with what you're taking, and again, you don't know exactly what you're taking. In general, effects are going to usually wear off over several hours. It's hard to say which route is more harmful. Obviously, dabbing or smoking really concentrated THC, you know, you could have more effects. Smoking and inhaling things is inherently bad for your lungs and your heart, and vaping can be really, really bad on your lungs. When using edibles, people may overindulge or you keep taking more product waiting for the onset of symptoms. Obviously, any route can result in changes in your level of consciousness, your sensorium, your perceptions, and that can obviously result in injury or trauma.
So talking about the effects of marijuana, I would love to know more about the effects of crossing. In these cases, crossing would mean ingesting both alcohol and marijuana at the same time. Are these effects more dangerous or are they different from each other?
Certainly, if you take to things that can disinhibit you or alter your sensorium, the effects of these things can be additive or greater than the sum of each. Again, there's going to be individual effects, meaning people are going to act differently. You're never going to know exactly what you're getting when you take THC or how much of it you're getting. And again, there's a risk of over-ingesting edibles, as effects may take longer than if you're smoking it. So you may overindulge.
I think my own take on that is if you take both, you're far more likely to end up in the emergency department and come see me.
So I'd love to pivot and talk about the mental health effects that marijuana use has. Are there any proven beneficial effects of marijuana? I actually just heard about a study out of Oregon that perhaps marijuana use can prevent COVID. Are there any proven benefits to cannabis use?
For intermittent recreational use, you're probably not going to notice a ton of impact on your mental health. So there is a whole slew of people out there that would probably disagree with me that would say that recreational use helps to chill them out. It helps to calm their mind. It helps to decrease their anxiety symptoms. Is this real? Is this a placebo effect? Who knows? But temporarily, they may experience some relief, but that may also be different from person to person. Now, regular use of marijuana is where we can run into a slew of issues when it comes to mental health. Oftentimes, we see that marijuana is used to treat, and by treat, I mean self-medicate, symptoms of anxiety and depression. However, a 2018 study that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine noted that those who use marijuana regularly to help with their anxiety and depression actually have an increase in their anxiety and depression symptoms, not a decrease. In addition, using marijuana regularly can also lead to an increase in paranoia. So when marijuana becomes legal in a state, there is a 20% increase in marijuana-related visits to the ER. And this is usually due to mental health issues such as anxiety, panic disorders, or paranoia. In fact, a study that was published just this year claims that those who visit the ER for marijuana-related issues, they are 3 times more likely to develop an anxiety disorder within the next 3 years. So something that marijuana users believe is helping their mental health may actually be making it worse in the long run. So long-term use of marijuana can lead to something called amotivational syndrome. And basically what this is you lose all drive, motivation, ambition, your hygiene may suffer, positive life functioning may suffer, and may all but disappear. You know, just kind of thinking about the stereotype of someone who doesn't work, lives in mom and dad's basement, kind of failure to launch, has kind of lost all drive and motivation for life. Now, obviously, that's a stereotype, but it's a good example of what can happen with regular marijuana use. As far as crossing goes, your mental health is absolutely going to be impacted. So using both alcohol and marijuana together are going to lead to a huge increase in anxiety, depression, and paranoia, in addition to increased impairment, slower reaction time. You're going to have heightened feelings of intoxication, memory and cognitive impairment, and you may also have an increase in risk-taking behaviors. So crossing can definitely lead to some not so great things happening with your mental health. As far as the beneficial effects, like I've mentioned, there are many people out there that would argue that they use it to self-medicate their symptoms of anxiety and depression and that it helps them. However, the research would say the opposite, that overall there are more negatives than positives if marijuana is used as a long-term treatment for mental health.
Medically, I agree with Christy. The only FDA-approved use of THC is something called dronabinol. It's oral, and it's used for refractory nausea and vomiting with chemotherapy or an appetite stimulant for people with like HIV wasting syndrome. And I think the risks of inhaling things and vaping, certainly not good for your heart and lungs, like I previously stated.
Mm-hmm. So what about CBD? Are there any benefits to CBD use?
I would say there actually is. So the research shows that while THC can induce anxiety in some, CBD can actually decrease it. The National Institute for Health even backs CBD as an evidence-based treatment for things like social anxiety, generalized anxiety disorder, OCD, PTSD, depression, and also sleep-related issues. So for a while, CBD oil was kind of the it thing to try if you struggled with depression or anxiety. For some people, they found it helpful. For others, they may have felt it didn't do a whole lot for them. But honestly, it depends on the quality of the CBD and also the dosage. If you're considering trying CBD oil or CBD to help with any mental health disorders, I would recommend speaking to a medical professional first to determine the best high-grade CBD and then also what their dosage recommendations would be.
Yeah, I agree with that. Currently, the FDA-approved use of CBD is for refractory seizures in some childhood diseases. So it is used medically for non-anxiety or insomnia and pain reasons as well.
I was just going to ask about that. I remember treating someone in the pediatric ICU with that.
Yep. It's called Epidolex, I think, if I'm saying that correctly. And then I also agree with Christy. You just need to remember that these things are not regulated, and so you never know how much you're getting or whether it's just pure CBD not contaminated with Delta-9 THC.
So it sounds like there are some benefits to CBD use. So can anyone buy CBD?
So traditionally, yes. However, every retailer will kind of have their own guidelines on who they're going to sell to. So thinking in terms of like gas stations, typically 18 years of age is the ideal number that you're going to see the most. But then other places like liquor stores, it may be up to 21. So it's just kind of the retailer and what they're comfortable with going off their shelves.
So Hannah, now that we got you into this, let's shift gears. I've got a question. So I'm asking on behalf of a friend, this is a hypothetical, this is not myself, but let's just say that I'm trying to help my friend who passed out after having an edible, and I call EMS for help. And let's just say I happen to have a bag of weed on me when the police arrive. I heard something about this lifeline law. Will that protect me?
Sure. So hypothetically speaking, no, the Indiana Lifeline Law will not protect you against charges for drugs such as marijuana. It was put in place to protect against minor alcohol-related offenses. But I will say that from my perspective, law enforcement is there to keep you safe. And that is our first priority. So you need to be a good friend. Call for help if somebody needs it, and we can figure out all the legal stuff on the back end. The number one priority is to get your friend medical help if they truly need it. And to kind of carry that on, I can only speak on the laws in Indiana and what I know here, so it may be different in other states.
So I'm going to jump on the hypothetical bandwagon here. So say I'm walking across my college campus and I get caught with marijuana. What are some of the long-term consequences that I could face?
Again, every campus is going to be different across the country, but I can speak here in Indiana. More than likely, you're going to run into issues with student conduct. So the police department isn't always involved if marijuana is found on campus or somebody is caught using marijuana, but our student conduct office will always be involved. And that can affect things like scholarships. So there really can be more long-term effects than just getting in trouble with the law. Your schooling could be in jeopardy as well.
So would this be true for all Indiana campuses? And what about states where marijuana is legal?
Every university is going to be a little different. So it's kind of tricky to answer this from a bird's eye view. But any university, so mostly public universities that receive federal funding, have to follow guidance from the Department of Education. So since federally, marijuana is still illegal, universities do have to follow policies in order to keep their students safe and follow federal law.
So I've heard people talk about synthetic marijuana, like the ones that you can get in a gas station. Exactly what is that? What are those?
Yeah, so we talked about the plant cannabinoids, but these are synthetic cannabinoids. Basically, they're made in a lab. It's not really found in the marijuana plant per se. And so basically, they're reverse engineering it or making it out of CBD. And they are better known as things like Spice or Kady, K-A-D-Y or K-A-T-Y or K2. And they have specific labeling on the package that says not for human consumption. And they're typically sold as like potpourri, although they have names like Scooby Snacks and AK-457, so why you would think that was potpourri, I don't know. And these, like the plant cannabinoids, actually also work by activating those CB1 receptors in our brain. So initially, these substances were synthesized by chemists, and he was trying to develop novel non-opioid pain medications. Essentially, his research came to nothing, but now these formulas are like in the internet and available. So it first started in Germany in 2008, and a novel drug was being marketed as Spice. So I don't know if that was maybe in reference to Dune. So then basically these chemicals took off because they were not yet illegal. They were very easy to make and very easy to sell. And as laws were eventually enacted, there was slight tweaking in the formulas that allowed manufacturers to evade these laws and continue to produce these products. And they don't generally always produce the same effect, specifically not that mellow high. They can cause anything from profound coma to agitation to seizures to kidney failure where you end up on dialysis. These substances have been responsible for outbreaks of zombie outbreaks you might have heard about where people will take them in groups and be unresponsive. There was a really big one in Philadelphia. And additionally, here in the Midwest where I practice, we had an outbreak of severe bleeding complications as these synthetic cannabinoids were actually contaminated with blood thinners. So again, that just goes to show you, you just never really know what you're getting. Fortunately, poison control data shows that as actual THC is now legal and much more available, use of these agents is declining and use of THC is rapidly increasing.
So what you're telling me is if I smoke Spice, I'm not going to turn into Timothy Chalamet and go and lead the Fremen?
Unfortunately, probably not.
Dang it.
You might think so, but no.
Yeah, you might think it yourself.
Wow, it's really shocking that that can have that big of an effect and such dangerous consequences. How can that be legal when natural products like THC and CBD aren't?
Yeah, so these synthetic agents aren't actually all legal. For instance, that initial compound I talked about, it's now illegal and there's a lot new ones that people keep making. It's just that package statement that says it's not for human use and the tweaking of the chemicals sometimes lets people get around this. If I could speak real quickly, hemp-derived cannabinoids are not controlled substances. So if they have less than that 0.3% THC, they can be legal. So this means CBD. And also Delta-8 THC, which is derived from CBD, are legal at the federal level. Again, each state makes its own rules. In the state where I practice, CBD is legal. And currently, we have no laws addressing the possession, sale, or manufacture of Delta-8 THC. So the laws are pretty murky and nebulous and kind of confusing depending on where you live.
And not only are the laws kind of murky, but also what you're taking is murky. I mean, yeah. I must have seen half a dozen people in the last year in the ER who took Delta 8 because their friend told them it was, you know, yep, normal and great and not that big of a deal. And then they're in the ER with a panic attack. Yep. Yep. Hannah, I have a question. We talked about decriminalization earlier. Things are sometimes made legal, but things are sometimes decriminalized. Can you explain the difference between if something's legalized versus something's decriminalized?
It's more of like a seatbelt ticket than,
yes,
like, hey, you should probably wear it, but
yeah, it's still not legal, but it's now, you know, we're not sending a bunch of people to jail.
You know, I'm not looking to give a college student a criminal record over a baggie of marijuana,
yeah,
right?
Right, like, yeah.
We have to be rational that, you know, our college students are going to experiment with this stuff and we just got to help them make safe decisions along the way.
And I think that's what a lot of kind of the policy should be about is safety.
I want students to still know that, like, there's consequences if they smoke marijuana on campus. I don't want them to, like, interpret that the wrong way.
I have a question actually for you, Hannah, just more out of curiosity, hypothetically. No, because I know that when you're driving, like, and you're under the influence of alcohol, you know, you can do the test and you can blow for the blood alcohol content. But if people are driving, like, high under the influence of marijuana, how do you know? Do you have any tests? I've always wondered that.
Yeah, so we can call in a DRE, a drug recognition expert. So they have more advanced tests on how to recognize drugs in somebody's behavior instead of alcohol. But your impairment is still going to look similar, especially with marijuana. Like, you're going to slow down so much. Like, we're going to recognize those behaviors just in interacting with you. Your balance could be off. Very similar things that you would see with alcohol. We're going to see those same impairment levels with marijuana. And when you roll down your window and there's just like smoke billowing out of the car.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I've heard that you can't get addicted to marijuana like you can to alcohol. Is that true?
So from the mental health perspective, the truth is you can get addicted to anything. So if you have an addictive personality, if you have addictive tendencies, or if you do something long enough for it to become a habit, you can also get addicted. So the question with marijuana is, do you get addicted to the substance itself? Do you get addicted to the way it makes you feel from the high? Do you get addicted from the act of consuming the substance, for example, smoking or vaping? Or do you get addicted from the habits you create, for example, taking it at night to help you wind down? But all in all, marijuana can be addictive. Here are some signs that you might be addicted. So you crave it. You need larger amounts of it to achieve the same desired feeling. You may try to cut back, but you're unsuccessful. You spend a great deal of time trying to obtain marijuana. It impacts your life in more than one area. You may have irritability or mood changes if you can't gain access to it. You may notice changes in your appetite and sleep. Or when you try to stop or decrease, you may experience physical discomfort. So the National Institute on Drug Abuse states that dependence and addiction rates for marijuana are 4 to 7 times higher if you start using it before the age of 18. So I have personally treated clients with marijuana dependence and addiction before in my private practice. And let me tell you, the withdrawal from it, while it's not dangerous, it is not fun.
Yeah, to build on what Christy said, physical dependence occurs when your brain adapts. And so because of these changes, if you stop using the THC, that's when you get the symptoms Christy was talking about. If I could add, there's something called cannabis hyperemesis syndrome. Mm-hmm. Dr. McBride probably knows very well what I'm talking about.
Not personally, but yes.
This occurs in frequent THC use, and it's refractory nausea, vomiting, horrific abdominal pain, and people continue to use THC despite these symptoms and through these symptoms, and it's very hard to treat.
This is the toughest. I want to emphasize that again. Cannabis or cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome is terrible because by the time you've gotten it, you've been using marijuana regularly for a while and you think that that's the only thing that will help your nausea, and it makes your vomiting so much worse, and it's very tough to treat. So let that be a warning to anyone who's considering getting a habit on marijuana. Something Sam said earlier was that there's not a lot of high quality evidence about marijuana. And I think that's part, and Mary, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's mostly part to the fact that it is only recently accepted. And so there's not a lot of available data because people wouldn't necessarily disclose the fact that they use it regularly. That's only really happened in the last 10, 20 years ish. And then kind of looking back on how long it took the medical community to notice that, for instance, smoking cigarettes caused lung cancer. So if we only have a couple decades of data on marijuana use, smoking, edibles, all of it, then how long is it going to take us to realize all of the very negative long-term effects of this? You know, this isn't an marijuana versus tobacco podcast today, but just something I wanted to kind of bring up, that we might not know that there are very, very dangerous things that can happen that we aren't already seeing. I have heard a lot of people say, well, at least I don't smoke cigarettes, I just smoke marijuana. I don't know that we can necessarily say that that's the safer option yet.
Yeah, agreed. It's hard to do randomized controlled double-blinded studies.
It's tough to convince a bunch of paranoid pot users that this study is going to help them, and they just signed something that says how much they use marijuana. We can help them out.
I can't tell you the amount of deja vu I just felt because of you saying, like, well, I don't smoke cigarettes, I just smoke weed. That seems to be just like the tagline for like everyone I talk to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't vape or I don't smoke, I just vape, or now I vape THC. And Mary was talking about, you know, the different concentrations of everything. Don't even get us into vapes, because that is really a crap roll there on how much you're getting.
Well, pivoting and talking about concentrations, is it easier to overdose on alcohol or marijuana?
Well, I'm going to quote Paracelsus, who's the father of toxicology. All things are poison and nothing is without poison. The dosage alone makes it so a thing is not a poison, or in other words, it's the dose that makes the poison. So again, with these cannabinoid products, whether they're the plant ones or the synthetic ones, you cannot tell what your content is. You cannot be sure of the purity or the potency. So, you know, it's hard for me to answer this question because you just don't really know how many of these cannabinoid products that you're getting. And again, with edibles being so frequent now, people tend to overtake them. Having said that, overdosing on marijuana generally is not going to have medical acute life-threatening situations. Sure, you may get in a car accident or fall off a building and so forth, but again, kind of hard to say for me.
And as far as your mental health goes, either one can dramatically negatively impact your mental health. So again, take that into consideration with any alcohol or marijuana use.
So I don't think that I'm going to get a great answer from you guys when I ask which is safer, marijuana or alcohol. So I also don't think that's really the point when everything's said and done. So would each of you or guests just kind of boil it down for us? When someone asks you which is safer, marijuana mm-hmm. or alcohol, what do you say?
I say neither and both. So from a mental health standpoint, they are both substances that can negatively impact your functioning. They can put you in situations where you lose inhibition. They can cause you to increase any symptoms of anxiety, depression, and paranoia. So it really boils down to how much are you consuming, the frequency, and why you are consuming it. But in moderation, both will have a minimal mental health impact.
Can I echo and ditto Christy?
All a lot.
Okay.
And as I said before, like current products have a much higher THC concentration than they previously did. And THC and other cannabinoids are actually widely available and even legal in quite a few states now. Legality does not confirm safety, and using THC is not without consequences. Remember that CBD is oftentimes actually contaminated with Delta-9 THC, and Delta-8 THC, even though it's legal, is a psychotropic agent. So I'm kind of neutral on which is better, safer, with the caveat, as I said previously, that you don't have standard content, purity, or potency, so you just really don't know what you're getting with THC.
And from the law enforcement perspective, obviously reiterating that marijuana is still illegal in Indiana and alcohol use is not permitted until you're 21. But for me, it's really environmental. So if you're choosing to experiment with alcohol or other drugs, it's really place and time. Where are you doing that? Please never get behind the wheel after experimenting with alcohol or marijuana. Do it in a safe place with people that you trust and know as much as you can about what you're consuming when you're trying these things.
Well, thanks, everyone. I think that makes a lot of sense, right? Dose makes the poison. It's not necessarily that either of these in small amounts are going to be very dangerous, but I completely agree and echo your points. Make sure that you're in a safe environment if you do decide to imbibe either of these, and make sure that we make safe decisions during and afterward as well.
Okay, we want to offer a huge thank you to our guests, mm-hmm. Dr. Wormuth, Hannah, and Christy, for taking the time to help clarify some of the myths surrounding marijuana use and CBD use. Thank you guys so much.
So where can a person go to get more information?
Many campuses have resources about substance use and intervention services, so reach out if you're interested in learning more about resources on campus.
For the medical side, there's something called Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, or SAMHSA, S-A-M-H-S-A. Those have a really good synopsis of the medical effects of cannabinoids.
I would echo those, and I would also add the National Institute on Drug Abuse, which is NIDA. This is where I pulled some of the stats that I quoted today. So all of those are good places to go do some reading and see some evidence-based information about marijuana use.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Join us again next time on Safe Tea.
Safe Tea is brought to you by Rachel's First Week. Executive producer, Dr. Angie Feige. Sound engineer, Ben Vauder. And a very special thanks to American Medical Response, NASCAR, and Healthcare Initiatives for their financial support of this podcast. Visit us on Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, and Twitter at hashtag Rachel's First Week. Don't forget the A in Rachel, spelled R-A-C-H-A-E-L. RachelsFirstWeek.org. We want to hear from you, so contact us at RachelsFirstWeek.org. Don't forget to subscribe now so you don't miss a single episode of Safe Tea.